Hello, this is Keith Teedy from New Media Central. I call this podcast this week Rambling because that's what I do. I'm rambling. And I did it intentionally. I just wanted to start talking. Talk about some stuff that was, you know, that I'm doing currently and I'm interested. I wasn't even sure if I was going to publish this on my site. I decided to because there's a good part in it about Hillary, and anything about Hillary that sheds a little light on the truth needs to be out there. So that was actually my determining factor. I thought, no, I'm not going to put this out there. It'll be boring. People don't really want to hear about my personal life. That's my podcast this week. I go a lot of different places. I talk about buying a house. I talk about little wood projects that I'm working on. I like to build things out of wood, especially exotic woods, because they're so beautiful when you're finished. I go a little bit in the process, and I go a little bit into why I like it. One of the main reason probably is because it's relaxing to me. There's frustrating parts when you're doing that kind of thing. Things don't fit exactly right, or things don't happen the way you think they're going to when you're putting the finish on or something like that. It's a little frustrating sometimes. When you build the jewelry boxes, a lot of times it's kind of hard to get the hinges on so that when you close the lid, it closes just right. That's kind of a hard thing to do. So it can be a little frustrating in those situations, but for the most part, it's very relaxing and the satisfaction factor is very high. Sometimes when you're working on a box or any wood project or jewelry for that matter, get to a point where you go, I could make this a little teeny bit better. With a lot of effort, a lot of energy, a lot of work, I can make it a teeny bit better. And then you go, it's perfect the way it is. And if I do this thing that I'm thinking about doing to make it a little teeny bit better, it may mess it all up so that I either have to start over or trash it or put up with less than what I got right now. So there is that sometimes. Sometimes the endpoint's a little bit fuzzy, but yeah. I'm pretty good at that now. For a long time, that was an issue for me, knowing when to stop. Got enough experience now in a lot of the stuff that I do that I know if I push it too far, I'm going to have less. It's not going to be as cool as it is right now. So that's my deal for this week. Once again, I always like to mention that I appreciate your comments. Questions, if you have any, www.newmediacentral.org. There's a place right in there. All my podcasts are listed there. You can listen to them there. If you're currently listening on iTunes, that's a fine way to listen to them. They're all out there. But on my website, you get them a little sooner. It takes a couple of days for them to show up on iTunes. And that may not be a big deal, but if you go to my website, they're all out there and they happen instantly. As soon as I post them, they're there on my website. And I do appreciate your comments, so please keep them coming. Enjoy the show. Okay, so I'm just going to start talking because there's so many things that I want to talk about. And each one of the things I want to talk about has so much stuff that needs to be said about it. Sometimes I feel overwhelmed. Like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to even start? There's so many topics that I want to discuss. There's a couple of topics that I really want to talk about, but I know if I talk about them the way I really want to, I'll probably really piss off a bunch of people. One of the things particularly that I'm thinking about is a third rail. If you talk about it in the way that I want to talk about it, I will never have any kind of following on this podcast. So I'm not going to do that right now. Other ones that I would like to talk about, election. Let me talk about that a little bit. Hillary Clinton wants to put together $2.9 billion That's not even close to the realm of reality. That's not even close to what could possibly be acceptable in this country. We can't. We really can't do this. We can't have elections cost $2 billion to $3 billion per candidate. One thing I always wonder, where does that money go? Where does $3 billion go in a campaign? I know there's TV ads, there's travel, there's, you know, housing, office space, workers, you know, but they're all volunteers. I mean, where's $3 billion go? Okay, let's say, for instance, that she's got, we're talking about Hillary right now, let's say she's got 50 people working for her in her campaign. And they're all making $2 million apiece. That's $100 million. I'm going to have to write this down because I can't keep it in my head. So, okay, back again. They got 50 people in her operation. She's paying them $2 million apiece, which is crazy, and she's not, and most of them are volunteers. That's $100 million. And office space, they need it for a year. It's $2,500 a month. It'd be $30,000. Okay, let's say it's a... Let's say the office space is $1 million for all the stuff that they need. So that's $101 million. Okay, they need TV. I don't know what spots cost on TV, but even if it's really, really expensive and they do a bunch of ads, another $100 million. And this is crazy. What I'm saying right now is totally crazy. $100 million? $100 million for TV? But even if it's that crazy, we're still at $201 million. Okay, what else? We got your people, we got your space, we got your TV ads. Let's say mailings is another, let's say $10 million for printing and postage. So that's $211 million. What else? We need IT guys. They're going to get $50 million. That's $261 million. Okay, we got IT, we got space, we got TV, we got mailings. We got people. She doesn't have to worry about security because she's got her Secret Service. Maybe she's got to have security for some of the people that works for her. So let's say a couple of million there. So that's $263 million. And what else? Got your IT people. You got your staff. You got your space to stay. Travel. Let's say another $20 million in travel. Okay. That's a bunch of stuff, and I've way inflated every possible amount for these things. We're at $283 million, which is way, 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 way too much. But it doesn't even come close to $3 billion. It's barely a quarter of $1 billion. Where does that money go? Where does that $3 billion... Let me just venture a guess here where it goes. At least some of it. I'm not even going to say it because you already know what I'm thinking. Where that money goes, that treasure chest of money that she's putting together for this election, after the, let's just say a half a bank and double what I've said already for all, for their people and the places to stay and the TV and the, you know, all the advertising and IT people and food and travel and all that stuff. All those crazy numbers that I was putting on them, double those, and it's still a half a billion, which is so way over the top that it's not even possible to even talk about. But that's 1/6 of what she says she can. Where does that money go? Please, somebody tell me. It is too crazy to even think about. All right, let's talk about something else because I'm going to make myself insane if I talk about that anymore. I want to talk about a little bit. Well, let's talk about a little project I have going, a little fun thing I do. I build wooden boxes, and I've got two of them going right now, and they're pretty cool. I used a wood called Purple Heart. It's a pretty amazing wood, really. It's actually purple. and it's not dyed. That's the color it is in nature. It's pretty amazing. One thing that I've discovered using it is you have to be very careful on how you finish it because it changes the color of it. Right now, it's a beautiful color. It's a deep red, but it's not purple. So clearly, I haven't worked with it enough to figure out how to put a proper finish on it to make it look purple when it's done. Now, I did do a little research on it, and I found out that all wood changes color over time. Once you cut it, turn it into lumber, and then turn it into a project, and it stays out in the open air, even if you put a finish on it, it changes. I've got a bunch of wood projects that I put together, and I still have a few around the house here, and most of them get darker with time. Cherry, when you first get cherry, it's almost white. It's real pretty. When I think of cherry, I think of really deep red, which is what color it turns after time. I've got a jewelry box that I made several years ago out of cherry, and it's really when I first finished it, my wife looked at it and she goes, "That's not cherry, because it's white." I mean, it's basically white, but over the years it turns red, and the longer it goes, the deeper red it goes, and it's, I don't even remember how many years it is now. It's probably getting close right now to its final color, because they do stop at some point continuing to get darker. But it's a beautiful color right now. Walnut doesn't seem to darken that much. It looks quite a bit darker when you put the finish on it from just the raw wood. But once it's completely finished with all the polyurethane or whatever you're putting on it, it doesn't really get much darker over time. At least that's what I've noticed. But I did go on a website after I put some finish on one of the boxes that I made out of Purple Heart, and it made it a deep red as opposed to purple. It's still a really beautiful color, but it's not purple. Oh, it's kind of a really deep purple. Looks reddish. But anyway, I looked around a little bit and did some research online about it, and Purple Heart is notorious for darkening over time. So I don't know what it would be, maybe a teak oil or something, maybe some kind of oil where it would keep the color better, but polyurethane darkens it quite a bit when you just first put it on. So anyway, that's the project I'm working on right now. I really love making things out of wood. It's very satisfying to me. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of skill. But when you get done, it's so beautiful. To me, it's like making jewelry. I love to make jewelry too, because it's, to me, the cool part on making jewelry out of silver or gold. While you're making it, it looks like a piece of junk metal, because you heat it up with the torch, you get it red hot and put solder on it, and it oxidizes. It looks like a piece of junk. Then you get some sandpaper on it, and then you get some polishing cloth on it, and it turns into this beautiful, beautiful, shiny metal thing. And that's my favorite part, is when it changes from that hunk of metal to a beautiful piece of jewelry. Same thing with wood. While you're working on it, it's not quite as dramatic with wood, because wood looks pretty cool while you're working on it. I mean, it doesn't look nearly as cool as when it's totally finished with a good varnish on it, or a good polyurethane or some kind of rub. But it looks pretty cool the whole time you're working on it. Transformation is still unbelievable to me. I love, especially that, you know, that first coat of when I'm using polyurethane, I thin it out quite a bit. A lot of places say 20 to 25% thinned out. I usually go way more than that, because what I want it to do is really go deep into the pores. And that may be why I was having the trouble with the Purple Heart turning so dark, is because I used a really, probably about 50-50 polyurethane and mineral spirits mix. Anyway, one of the boxes, I'll describe them kind of briefly here. It's just a rectangular box. It's, 7 inches wide, 5 inches deep, and about, I don't know, 2.5 inches tall. Very small compared to my normal size boxes. Well, not very small, but small compared to my normal size boxes. I usually make them a little bigger than that. Anyway, it's really cool, and I use brass on it. So around the lid, there's a 1/4 inch square brass going all the way around the perimeter of the top. And then also, when you open it, where the lid and the bottom touch when you close it, that's all brass too. And it looks really, really cool. It's very, shined it up really nice. Actually, I put a brush finish on it, because I didn't want to have it where the owner, whoever it happens to be, would have to polish the brass, because when you put brass with wood, if you end up having to polish the brass polish will affect the wood that's by it. So I put a brush finish on it, and then I actually put polyurethane over the brass, which is not uncommon. It's a lot of times when you have brass furniture and stuff, it's got a coating on it so that it doesn't turn brown and need to be polished. But anyway, describing that box again, I've got the purple heart wood, which is really beautiful, and it's got that brass around it. And even though it's not purple, the deep red is really a beautiful color. And it's got some really nice chatoyance, which is, it's kind of like a gemstone. When you move it in the light, it looks like it's rippling effect. It's some really beautiful wood. You can see that a lot of times. And some of that purple heart that I have has some really high chatoyance to it. And it's really cool when you move it around in the light. So, and then the other one, it's similar in size. It's a little bit taller, and it's got, has a vaulted ceiling type thing. The top of the box is, you know, the sides go up straight, and then it's about a 45 degree angle. It goes up another probably 3/4 inch, and the width of that is about 3/4 inch too. And then, of course, inside that is where the top of the box is. And inside that, I don't have brass around it like I do on the other one, but I do have a brass plate in the very center of the top. And basically what it is, it's four hearts, tip of the hearts touching almost in the middle. One's going north, one's going east, one's south, one west. It's cut out in the brass, and behind it is black wood with a very thick resin on top of that. So it's really pretty too. That's what I do for entertainment and get my head together. When I'm down there working on the boxes, I can really let everything go, kind of relax a little bit, even though it's kind of tense sometimes. Most of the time, it's real relaxing. You know, you're sanding or you're doing something that's kind of monotonous, and so you have a time to that you can kind of relax your brain and think about other things besides all the BS that's going on in the world today. Still looking for a house to rehab. Actually, my wife and I went out looking for a house to move to. We're thinking about moving. Nothing's taken off the table. We thought about Arizona. We thought about Tennessee. We thought about moving around here. And there's a lake nearby where I live, and my sister and my father both live on that lake. And we've been looking out there since we moved here, basically, 25 years ago, 26 years ago. We actually went and looked at one yesterday out there. It needs some work, which is what I do, so probably get a pretty good price on it. Any of y'all out there ever lived on a lake, then you know what lake living is like. It's typically a lot of bugs near water, so that's something you got to put up with. A lot of times, especially on first tier, there's moisture in the house. You know, if you want like a nice dry house, it doesn't happen much on a lake. You can. It's difficult to do, especially in an existing house that's been there for a while. They didn't have the technology back then to keep basements dry. So I remember I grew up out there, and I remember when it rained, we had a river in our house. I loved it at the time when I was a kid. You know, I'd play in it. Seems bizarre now because it's a different world now, and that water, that water that was going through the basement probably wasn't really clean and pure back then, but it at least it wasn't like it is now, where it'd probably kill you if you played in it now. It did. I mean, the water came in the house, and we'd open up. We had a big sliding glass door, and we'd open it up wide open and take brooms and sweep the water out of the house. You know, it'd flow through pretty much anyway, but then when it flowed down, we'd just take brooms and sweep it out. It'd dry up. The floor was concrete with that rubbery kind of tile on top of it, and so I'm sure it wasn't ideal as far as mold and stuff like that, but hell, we never knew anything about it. It wasn't a big deal. It would be a big deal to me now, but it wasn't then. It might have been to my parents, but I mean, that's part of lake living. I mean, you can build a house on a lake now, even on first tier, and keep it pretty dry, but it's just humid around water. I mean, that's the nature of the beast. So we have all these things that we consider when we're thinking about moving to the lake, and that's part of it. And of course, lake houses are for the same square footage and quality of house, it's like twice as much or more to live on a lake, or three times as much, just because of the way it is. So that's something else that we have to keep in mind. Matter of fact, when we moved into the house that we're living in now, 26 years ago, we'd been looking quite a bit out the lake. Matter of fact, we made an offer on a house out there, same lake. The guy ended up not selling it to us. So basically, we could have either been out at the lake or in this house that we're in right now. And the price, the lake house was actually a little bit higher than this one. But this is way more house. It's a story and a half, close to 3,000 square feet. That's something we've been doing, looking around. But like I said, nothing's off the table. We've been looking out in Arizona and Mesa, and we looked all over. We found one really nice house that we both liked a lot, and the price seemed like really good because prices on houses out there are pretty high because it's a destination. People want to live there now. It had a great price on it, looked great. We're thinking really hard, what's going on here? Do we just get lucky and find a really good deal, or what's going on? And it was 15 miles from the Mexican border. We thought, well, that might not be too bad. Might not be too good either. There's a lot of stuff going on down there in Mexico right now and anywhere along the border. Some places are worse than others, but it doesn't really mean much. I think that was why the price of the house was such, was that it was that close to the border, and we decided to pass on that one. Anyway, what else is going on? Working with my computer, I've got one of those super fast hard drives on my desktop, a solid state drive that makes it really come on fast, and you can get the files quicker and everything, and I really like it. But right now, the price of those is high enough that I've got the 120 gig hard drive. I was thinking about getting a new one because the price of them has come down quite a bit. And for the price I paid for that 120, you can get a 250 now, or even a half a terabyte for not a whole lot more. And or even a terabyte, they've got those out there now that are kind of reasonable, $400 or $500 for those. The biggest problem with that is all that you have to do. I guess I could just take it somewhere and say, here, take everything off this hard drive, put it on this new one. I just want a bigger hard drive. But I never do that. I like doing it myself. I don't want to give anybody access to all my stuff, although I'm sure it's safe here locally. You just never really know. I mean, today's world, you got to be very careful about all your stuff, especially stuff that's on your computer. People can get to it. Even no matter what you do, people can get to it. And just taking it somewhere and say, here's all my stuff. You may not want it, but you may not be as careful as me making sure that nobody else can get to it while you're working on it. So anyway, I do it myself, and the thought of spending all that time getting all the information off this current one to the new one, and I know they've got software when you buy them that does it automatically for you and all that stuff, but I don't know. I freak out about that a little bit. I'm too worried that I would lose it all, and even though I've got all my stuff backed up and all that stuff on a separate external hard drive and on a lot of stuff I have on disk and stuff like that, it still just freaks me out a little bit. And thinking about spending all that time doing that conversion, I just put up with it. But anyway, an alternative was putting stuff on a cloud to free up space on that hard drive. But what I've discovered is if you have it synced, which is what's cool about the cloud, is you don't save that space. You have all the files on your hard drive and you have them all in the cloud, and they sync back and forth, keep everything up to date, but you still use up all your space on your hard drive when you do it that way. The alternative is to not sync them, and that kind of defeats the purpose. Basically, it's just another external hard drive at that point. Anyway, I'm still kind of figuring out how I want to do that. I want to free up some space on my hard drive, but I also want to have access to this information on my desktop here, and also, available other places, which that's cool about the cloud. If you do it, and you have it all synced up, whenever you do something on my, for instance, if I do something on my desktop here, I can walk downstairs, get on my laptop, and it's all right there, all up to date and everything. And then I can go to someone else's house if I wanted to, get on their computer and have all that stuff right there available to me. And I think it's very cool. If I want to show someone a picture and I know it's on my computer at home, I can show it to them now using my phone or a tablet. And I think that's way cool. But when I first thought about it, I thought, oh, cool, I'll put everything on a cloud, and then I got all this space free on my hard drive. It doesn't work that way if you sync it up. So I've been looking at websites, trying to figure out how to do it, and there's ways to do it. There's a downside of every way that you do it, and an upside. So, trying to figure out how I want to do that, or just go out and get one of those bigger hard drives and take the time and do it. Yeah, it turns out 120 gigs seems like a lot, but it's not. It's nothing. I did it, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, and I set it up right. I put all the big stuff, all these podcasts and all my art and music and all that stuff. I don't have it on this hard drive. I have it on another internal drive, and I also back it up on an external drive. And so I don't have even putting effort into not putting any more stuff on your operating system hard drive. It still builds up. And right now I've got, like, on that 120 gig hard drive, I've got like 100. So I've only got 20 gigs left. And one thing about especially operating system hard drives, as a lot of you know, seems to be less of an issue with SSDs. But if you have a hard drive and it's more than half full, you really have a loss in computer speed. Seems like it's right around half. And I don't know if I'm not a computer geek totally. I don't know for sure. And I've read about it a little bit. If your hard drive is more than half full, you start losing speed on your computer. To me, I think what happens is whenever it does what it does, it needs twice as much space than you're using to do all the stuff that it does, moving stuff around and that kind of thing. And that may be why it's less of an issue for the SSDs, is because the stuff's just out there. On a hard drive with a disk in it, it has to put that stuff in physical locations, and it gets all junked up pretty quick. But on the SSDs, it just puts it out there. It's just space, and it puts it out there. So anyway, that's something I'm working on, something that's a bit of an issue for me, trying to get it figured out. I guess maybe at some point, if I do get it figured out and I get a good system that works good, I'll talk about it a little bit on one of these podcasts. This is kind of a departure from me. I don't usually just sit around and chat, but it's been such a long time since, you know, it's been 3 weeks now since I did my last one. It seems like yesterday. And once again, like I said, so many possible things to talk about, so many topics, so many issues. When I think about them and I think, okay, that's what I'm going to do on my next podcast, and I go, oh my goodness, where do I start? How can I even scratch the surface of this? How can I say everything that needs to be said for people to have a good understanding of what I'm talking about without spending 50 hours of talking time? And that's just the number I grabbed out of the air. It just seems so overwhelming sometimes. There's just so much going on right now and so much involved in every single thing that it takes a lot of time. But what I've decided is you can't just cover completely everything about every subject. You just have to pick and choose. On the radio and other podcasters and stuff, they just pick the current stuff to talk about. I kind of use that too, but I think about other stuff a lot. There's some things that I've been thinking about for a long time. There are a lot of things that I think about that aren't absolutely current news, and I'd like to do podcasts about them. But here's an example: the way that our government creates and uses money, the way that we're messed over on that deal, it makes our economy so fragile. The way that the Fed and everybody creates money out of thin air. I want to talk about that, but it's such a huge thing. I kind of don't even know where to start sometimes. I mean, it's just, they make money. They print money. You hear about it all the time, but you don't really know what's going on. I'd like to be able to explain that sometime to the best of my knowledge. And banks loan money that they don't have. And people use that money to go spend on stuff that they can't afford to spend it on. And it's a deep hole that we've created for ourselves in that regard. I mean, still, and I say this every time I talk about anything like that, and the United States is still the best economy in the world, it's fragile. I mean, back when I was growing up, 50s and 60s, I never even really thought about it because it was so universally understood. The United States had an extremely sound economy. A number of things, including greed, has caused that to change. Bankers loan money that they don't have. That when they got rid of the gold standard, that's when we started having problems. What an economy needs to be totally solvent and totally secure is some kind of standard. A gold standard, for example, used to be, before they issued one single dollar, they had a dollar's worth of gold in Fort Knox. Every dollar that every person had in this country had value. other than just something picked out of the sky. It had actual gold bars in a vault that the paper represented. It was back in 1933 that the gold standard ended. FDR outlawed private gold ownership, and with that ended the gold standard. 1944, the Bretton Woods monetary exchange rate was established among independent nations, and then that ended in 1971, and all formal links between major world currencies and real commodities ended. Now we have what's called fiat money, where currency is intrinsically valueless. It has no value whatsoever. It fluctuates and is based on supply and demand of the currency and of commodities. And when we got rid of that, that's when the lid came off. And it's a mess. It's very fragile right now. I mean, we're holding it together, and hopefully we'll be able to continue to hold it together. You know, the deficit that we're carrying right now is crazy. And it wasn't Bill Clinton that did it. It happened on his watch, though, because of things that Ronald Reagan had done when he was in office. The budget was balanced. We had zero deficit during, or we had a surplus even during Bill Clinton's presidency. And it wasn't anything he did. It would have happened regardless who was in office because of some things that people had done previous to him. But to think, you know, that wasn't that long ago, to go from zero, a surplus, to a deficit of trillions. That's what I'm talking about when I say it's fragile. It's insane and crazy and stupid and scary. And it happened. It's such a deep hole now, it's going to be very hard to get out of if there's any desire by any politician to do it. And that's things that we need to do. One of the reasons that I have this podcast and why I want to have our revolution, whatever kind it is, a peaceful one or a bloody one or whatever, anything in between, we need to do something. Because if we continue to elect people that are going to increase the deficit the way we're doing now, there'll be no way it can be paid back. And we won't have the best economy in the world anymore. So that's, you know, that's just one thing that the politicians are doing now that's really messed up and really hurting us as a nation and hurting each individual in the nation by doing reckless stuff with the country's treasure. That's, you know, that's an example of something that I want to talk about. And I kind of brushed on it right now, but I didn't give, in my head, I think of this way to explain this to people and a way to fix it. And I can never express it properly when I start talking about it because, you know, it's the same old thing. When what's in your head and what comes out, it's two different things a lot of times. I'd like it to all be the same thing. And I strive to get it there. And that's why I get overwhelmed so much sometimes is because how do you do that? Is it possible to take what's in your head and express it verbally so that other people can understand it so that we can get a handle on this thing and get these crooks out of office so that we can get our country back to where it needs to be, where it was at one time and where it should be right now? It's hard to verbally express the things that I believe will actually be helpful if we could get it to actually happen. So what do? There's things you can do. You know, you try to get the right guy elected. I don't know. There's, 15 people in the Republican camp right now, and the Democrats have Hillary so far, and another guy's talking about it, and there's a few more. As I mentioned in a previous podcast, she's the presumptive Democrat nominee, and a lot of people think she's already president, basically. So we got to make sure that doesn't happen, or it's going to be more Barack Obama, even worse, a billion times worse. But the Republicans aren't that much better. I kind of like Rand Paul. I don't want to endorse anybody right now. And I like Scott Walker. I detest Chris Christie. Oh, my goodness. And I remember, and I said this in a previous podcast way back, you know, several months ago, people were sure that the election was going to be Hillary for Democrats and Chris Christie for Republicans. And that was who was going to fight it out. Well, that's changed a little now. Different ones on the Republican side have emerged as the main person. And it's changing, and it's going to change a lot of times, and nature of the beast that happens every election. I think it would be hilarious if there was another Democrat besides Hillary that made it through the primaries. I don't know. I'm not gonna breach that subject right now any further than I already have. And actually, I think I'm going to wrap it up here. I don't know how long this has been going, but it's probably pretty long. It's kind of rambling. It's probably going to be boring for anyone to listen to. but it gives you a little insight on my personal life. I'm not usually very generous when it comes to that. I just felt like rambling today, so that's what I did. Anyway, I think that's it.